Bava Metzia, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Beis, 4-2, and this Mishnah really is following on the previous one, where it starts out with the word Ketzad. So how does this work? So he gives an example. Mashach emeno peros velo nasan lo maos. If the purchaser takes the produce, meaning the merchandise, but doesn't yet pay for the goods that he's purchasing, enu yachol lachzer bo. Well, it doesn't matter. He can't go back on the transaction because, as we said before, what effects the transaction is the taking of the merchandise. So once he's taken the merchandise, boom, it's now his, and just a matter of him now making payment. On the flip side, nasan lo maos velo mashach emeno peros. If the buyer gave the money, but he has not yet taken the merchandise, yachol lachzer bo. He could go back on it, meaning that the transaction isn't done, because what affects the transaction is taking the merchandise. The fact you pay for it doesn't make it a done deal. So both parties could essentially backtrack and say, you know what, we're not going to do this. We found a better deal elsewhere, or something like that. That would be within their legal prerogative. Now, there is a machlokas in the Gemara whether or not the giving of money alone can affect the transaction, if taking money can be used as a ma'aseh kinyan or not. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the Torah says yes, it could. According to Reish Lakish, the Torah says no, it can't. Our Mishnah is reflecting that no, it can't. But Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, the reason why our Mishnah says it can't, even though the Torah says it could, is because the rabbis got involved. The rabbi said, wait a second. We don't want the handing over of money to affect the transaction. Why? Because we're afraid that once the seller has the money, he won't take any responsibility for the merchandise. And let's say, hypothetically, the merchandise is sitting back in his warehouse, and there's a fire coming. He'll pick up the phone and say, listen, you better act quick. Your stuff is going to get burned otherwise. And since he won't protect the stuff from getting burned, so then he won't protect the buyer from loss, because it's not his problem anymore, because he already sold it. Of course, not very ethical, but it will be legally within his rights to do so. Therefore, the rabbi said, no, until the purchaser is in physical possession, by taking physical possession through Hagbah or the like, he's Moshecha, whatever the case is, and the thing he's buying, it hasn't affected the transfer of ownership, and therefore the deal is not done. Okay? Now the halacha is that Midoraisa, while it's true that Midoraisa, handing over money does affect the Kenyan, Midorabanan, no, it doesn't. So now our Mishnah goes on to say, Aval Amru, however, the rabbi said, once you've given over the money, although technically speaking you could back out of it thanks to the rabbis, and there's a bit of a machlokas, there's a big machlokas actually in the early Rishonim, what the rabbis did mechanically exactly, did they say that it's just not binding or it's binding, you can back out of it? Be that as it may, the point is you can legally now back out of it by retracting your money. So the case is, you know, you are looking for a used car. Some guy says, I have, you know, a Toyota, a red Toyota of such a year, and I want, you know, $10,000 for it. And you say, great. And you give him a down payment, let's say, whatever it is, or give him the money, whatever the story is. And then there's a machlokas on that too, so I'm not getting into that. And then, you know, the next day when you go to pick up the, by the time you go to pick up the car, you find that someone else is selling the exact same car, you know, for $9,000. So you say, you go back to the guy, say, forget it, I want my money back. I didn't take your car, not a binding Kenyan, I got a better deal elsewhere. So a person could do that, but if he does, he's a bad guy, he's a dishonorable person, not standing by his word, and more than that, the rabbis invoked like a curse against him, which according to Rava and the Halacha, actually, they actually literally curse him out of the Beis Din, and the curse is referred to as the Misha Para situation, which means the one who took retribution, who paid out, but the Mishnah's words are Misha Para Me'anshe Dor HaMabel V'Dor HaFlaga, or HaPlaga, different, okay? The one who took the task, who took retribution, who paid out the men, the people of the generation of the flood, like in Noah's time, and the generation of the HaPlaga, or the HaFlaga, how it's typically pronounced, is like the Dor HaFlaga is the like the Tower of Babel, that generation after Noah, they got it. And the bartender actually brings a version like we see in the Braisa in the Gemara. It's not just those two, but also Umean She Stom, the people of Amora, the people of Stom and Amora, Umin HaMitzriim, Sheshtaf Bayam, and the Egyptians who Hashem drowned in the ocean. So let's say Hashem, Asid li parea mimisha eno omed bediburo. He, Hashem, will similarly take to task the guy who doesn't stand by his word, meaning the guy who paid money but backs out of it. So he gets his money back, but he's a bad guy. He's cursed up by the rabbis, and the curse is pretty intimidating that the same Hashem who took vengeance on those people will take vengeance on this guy as well. This Misha Para situation, the curse only applies to someone who actually gave money. If a person just gave his word, he says, yes, I'll take your car, I'll meet you tomorrow to exchange the cash for the car. So then if the next day he wants to back out, he's still not a person of his word. The rabbis, the Ruach HaChamim, the spirit of the rabbis, lo noche menu, they're not happy with him. So he's a bad guy still by being, I'm not standing by his word. But nevertheless, there's no curse of Misha Para if you didn't hand over the money. Okay. Now, the last opinion here, which is a little bit difficult to understand, is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon goes with the approach, like Rabbi Yochanan of the Gemara, that money handed over is, in fact, a Maisa Kinyan. But the rabbis who got involved and said it shouldn't be shouldn't affect the transaction, did in a more limited way. So the Rabbi Shimon, Omer, Kol Shekesef B'yado, if money is changed hands, so now the buyer gave money to the seller, Yado So that guy, the seller, who now has the money in his hand, Yado al ha'elyona, he has the upper hand. Meaning, what that means, not literally but idiomatically, is that if money's changed hands, so the seller now has the money, he has the upper hand because he can choose. He can either give the money back, or he could say that no, the transaction is binding. Meaning, from the purchaser side of things, says Rabbi Shimon, once the purchaser hands over the cash, he cannot go back. No Misha Para situation. He's bound by the deal altogether. The reason why Rabbi Shimon thinks that is because he says like this. Well, there's actually two, it's a big machlokas. According to the Bar Tanura, our hero, and our Gemara, and our Mishnayos over here, he learns it's a very specific case based on the Gemara, which is that in a scenario, it's a very limited application. Rabbi Shimon's saying, listen, in a scenario where the merchant is renting property from the purchaser, so that the purchaser happens to have a garage, in his garage, the merchant says, can I keep my wine over there? And the guy who's buying the wine now says, yeah, there's two guys, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has a warehouse, and Shimon says he needs space, so Reuven rents out some of the space in his warehouse to Shimon. In the space, Shimon puts the wine. Now, Reuven needs wine, so he goes to Shimon, he says, can I buy some of your wine? And they say yes, and Reuven hands over the cash. So now, says Rabbi Shimon, in such a scenario, it's a done deal. Handing the cash is a done deal from Reuven's perspective, even if Shimon could back out. And the reason why is because the whole reason we wanted to limit the efficacy of handing over cash is because you want the merchant to take responsibility if, like, a fire breaks out, say. But here, if there's a fire in the warehouse, it's Reuven's warehouse, so he for sure can take matters into his own hands, and he can save his own merchandise. So therefore, there's no reason to worry about him, and therefore it's just the seller. And as for the seller, so we say, listen, if he has the opportunity to back out of the deal, so then that's that. Now, the Tosafot doesn't like that shot. Exactly, he prefers Rosh's approach, which is more generic, not anything about specifically the merchandise being kept on the property of the purchaser. It's in general that if we give the seller the rights to back out of the deal if he wants to, so then he has just a basic economic incentive to keep his options open. It's like a free call option. He says, listen, if the market changes and I can get more money from my wine, then I'll just hand back this cash. So the fact that he stands to profit, he'll be on the lookout to protect the merchandise, even after he takes the money, because he can still do a better deal later, maybe. And that being the case, he'll protect it. If a fire's coming, he'll say, I better protect it from the fire. You know, fires are going to be good for me, because the fire spreading around town will make even less wine, and I can fetch a higher price. So the point is, he'll take responsibility. So Rabbi Shimon says, given that he can back out of it, he will take responsibility for the merchandise, and therefore there's no reason to not make the transaction be binding if it's from the buyer handing over the money. In any case, as difficult as that pshat is, it's not the halacha. The halacha is like the Tanakama, which is, as we said all along, it's the taking of the merchandise that affects the transaction and not the handing over the money ever. Just there's a potential, once you hand over the money, of the Misha Para curse if you back out.